So we're back on the road to Emmaus. We've been here a couple times in the last few weeks. It's a wonderful Easter story, and so I sort of beg your indulgence as we stay here for a moment. It feels like one of my new favorite words, liminal space. Do you know this word, liminal? It's kind of on the boundary. It's at the end of one thing and at the beginning of another. If I stood at the threshold back there in the doorway, I would be standing in liminal space, right? So it's in between space. Have you ever felt like you're in this place where one thing is ending and another thing is almost beginning and you're there? It's like you're, maybe it's a move, or maybe it's a job change or transition. I think I'm in a couple of these. I think I qualify for a couple of these. or maybe it's a relationship, right? One thing is ending, and you're dealing with all that comes with that, the grief of letting go, of things not being the way they used to be, just knowing that things are changing. Even if it's for the better, it can create stress and a sort of an unknowing about how it's going to be. And then there's this new thing coming. And it doesn't quite have a shape yet, but you just know it's going to be a little bit different than the way it was. I think about our church, quite honestly. We've been in liminal space for a while. Things are always changing. I think about the church in general. It faces uncertain times, right? The way church used to be, what it used to look like 50 years ago and what it looks like now and what it's going to look like, very different, very transitional, shifting, and you know, lots of things are emerging and becoming. And it's, you know, your grandparents would shake their heads and scratch their heads and say, this is not how we used to do church, right? Preacher never picked up a guitar and started singing in the middle of worship. That's weird. So here we are in this liminal space. And what makes me think of this, a couple things, but this story in Emmaus, I just think this is an excellent picture of what it's like to live in liminal space, right? And you know the story, they didn't have Drew read the whole thing, but you know, these disciples are on their way back from Jerusalem. They're going home after this whole Easter weekend, after Good Friday mostly. Easter is just a rumor and a suspicion at this point. Mostly they are just crushed. Their dreams are crushed and their hopes have been just almost destroyed. And they just, you know, and Jesus, unbeknownst to them, walks with them saying, why do you look so sad? What's going on? Well, everything they had hoped for is no more. Jesus has been crucified, dead and buried. And then in this liminal space, and the scriptures have wonderful words, he opened their eyes, right? He said, he opened the scriptures to us. Lots of things are opening in this story. He opened the scriptures to them. Later, he comes in, we're in this closed door gathering, and he opens their minds. Remember that? I preached on that just a couple weeks ago. He opens their minds. Their hearts were burning. And there's just this opening and letting things come, right? We have this bumper sticker, let go and let God. There's another phrase. I've been studying this book about something called presencing. And he used, this is an MIT guy. He's not a spiritual person, but this language is very interesting. It's letting go and letting come. So you're standing in this liminal space, this transitional space, and you're letting go of what was, and you're letting come what will be. And it's a very challenging place to be, and it requires a lot of faith. Even the MIT guy, by the way, his name's Otto Scharmer. He works with another guy you may have heard of, Peter Senge. These guys work with CEOs and corporations, and they help organizational change. They study organizational change, and they help whole systems, churches, governments, companies, you know, the automakers, you know, huge companies change the way they do things. And one of the things he does, he says in this moment, he describes this big U, and you're going down one side of the U, and you're letting go, and you're letting go. And then you hit the bottom, and all the things that used to be are no more, and it just feels like you've hit rock bottom. Same language we use for recovery in addicts, right? They hit rock bottom, and then they experience a shift. They let come something new, And then they move into this emerging future. It's wonderful language. And he says at the bottom, when you're letting go and you're letting come, he uses this word presencing. This is an act of presencing. And again, this is not a religious guy. He says, and you connect to source. This is MIT talking to Ford Motor Company, right? Can you picture this? And he's telling the CEOs of Ford Motor Company, connect to source and let come. It's just remarkable to me that the language and there is a real contemplative piece to this. And he encourages them silence, you know, and a lot of these places, you know, they do meditation in the workplace and everything. They're discovering all of these tools that a lot of us have known about for centuries, right? Meditation and prayer and connecting to source, that this actually helps them move into the future with more success. But there's a piece on this, and it's where I got my sermon title, and it's what I was thinking about. He calls these the voices, silencing the voices. Is that what I put for my sermon title? He also calls them the enemies. This is interesting to me because I know my greatest enemies. Do you know where they live? Right around here in this region somewhere, right? And he actually narrows it down to the head, the heart, and the gut, right? The voice of judgment and the voice of judgment and doubt, the voice of cynicism, and the voice of fear. Does any of this sound familiar to anybody? Am I the only one? I have this thing, and some people call it the inner critic. My inner critic is healthy. I exercise a lot. My inner critic, I don't know what he does, but he's buffed up. I mean, he is strong. Almost every time I set out to do something, this little voice of the inner critic starts questioning what I'm doing. Well, why are you doing that? Well, that's dumb. Well, that wouldn't work. Cynicism, doubt, fear. You know, I had to go to this training this week. This is not my world. This is not my wheelhouse. Corrections, you know, the Iowa Department of Corrections. And I had to go and sit in this training from 8 to 5 every day. And just Monday morning, just thinking about going into this, you know, sitting in a room with 20 other mostly corrections officers, prison guards. Let me break that down for you. And Pastor Paul, right? One of these things is not like the other. Well, it turns out I wasn't the only sort of pastor in the room. There were counselors. They have to go through this training. There was a pharmacist. She has to go through the... Anyone who's going to work inside the walls of a prison has to go through this training. But so it was, you know, it was 17 prison guards and me and a pharmacist and a couple of counselors. The voice of fear just started chiming up a lot for me Monday mornings. Like, I didn't know what I was walking into. I'm not going to be like them. I'm not going to fit in. I'm going to be Mr. Preacher person, and these guys are all, you know, armed guards, you know. It's going to be weird. Well, that was mostly just fear. That's all it was. Fear of the unknown, fear of something different, fear of something new. How do you think that turned out for me? It was just fine. Yeah. Mostly the fears that I whipped up into these huge scenarios. Nothing. And actually, these are wonderful people. They really are. They're quite remarkable people. They're young. They're old. There's young guys right out of college. They're just starting a career. And there's people that have been in similar work like this for 20 years. And they're what they want is to work for an organization that's doing the best it can and is accomplishing its goals of providing safety and protection to the community and to the inmate population. I mean, they all have really good life-affirming goals just like I do. So, yeah, it's like, huh, I wonder why that voice of fear, you know, it was... And then, of course, my voice of judgment pipes in and says, that was dumb of you to listen to that voice of fear. Right? That was stupid. Why were you doing that? Didn't you know? Right? So these voices, Otto Scharmer calls these the voices, the enemies. because they prevent us from moving into that future on the other side of the liminal space with confidence and positive outcomes towards the future that we want. One of the things that they do is they shield our vision. You know, and I talked about last week, I had this phrase, faith blind. People who, they can only see what they already know. And here's another great story out of this, the world of Otto Scharmer and Peter Senge. Peter Senge is this guy at MIT, and he wrote this book, it's 10 years old now, called The Fifth Discipline. Anybody know that book? I wouldn't expect you to know it, but changing systems and how organizations learn. He tells a story of, this was in the 80s, when American automakers were scratching their heads and trying to figure out, why are the Japanese making such awesome cars and why are so many Americans buying them? I was buying a Toyota. I still drive a Toyota. People were buying Toyotas and Hondas and Nissans, and it's like, so this group of American automakers wanted to learn from the Japanese. Commend them for that. They're doing something right. Let's go learn from them. So Peter Senge asked them, when they went and toured these Japanese auto plants, and they got back, and Peter Senge said, well, what was that like? Was it helpful? Did you learn anything? This one guy says, it was a waste of time. And Peter Senge's like, really? What happened? I said, well, it was staged. They didn't even show us a real auto plant. And Peter Senge's like, really? I said, yeah. You know, this guy knows what an auto plant looks like, right? Yeah, they were in lab coats, and it was a sterile environment, and, you know, he's thinking what an auto plant looks like. It's greasy, and there's tools everywhere, and it's a mess. The process of making cars is dirty, and, you know, and what they showed him, it didn't even come, he did not have eyes to see. I mean, he wanted to learn how they're doing things differently, and how do the Japanese make cars? Well, they make cars in a sterile environment. Right? They're not greasy and dirty. They have lab coats, and it's just it was such a different way of doing things. He couldn't even see that this was an auto plant. It just didn't look like his idea of an auto plant. Think about that, how that translates for us. When we see, some of us see churches out there that are so different. It's like, I don't know what they're doing, but they're not worshiping. You know, there's drums and there's electric guitars and there's laser shows. And part of me still says, yeah, that's not worship. But that's just me and my blind faith, right? My faith blindness. Can we even imagine what the future holds? These disciples on the road to Emmaus, they couldn't even imagine what a new Jesus looked like, what the resurrected Jesus looked like, right? They were faith blind. They did not recognize him. Until when? Yeah. Until he did something familiar to them. Well, he's like, I can just see Jesus. Well, maybe this will ring a bell. You know, he took, he blessed, he broke, and he shared. And then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him in the breaking of bread. Right? And the breaking of bread, I think, brings us back to that liminal place. I think it's not just that it was familiar, it's that it's liminal. It's threshold. The table is a threshold, right? It's when we stand at the table, we stand in a place that's not what it used to be, and it's not quite yet what it's going to be, right? We break bread and we share bread. We remember Christ and his love, but we also look forward to a day when the sharing by all will mean scarcity for none. So the way that we silence the voices, the enemies, ironically, is by opening the mind, by opening the heart, and by opening this language about the gut. The word for that is the will, right? So this is thinking, this is feeling, this is where we act. The gut is the place where we put into action, the place of volition. Right? So by opening our mind and our heart and our will to what can be and to what will be. So I'm studying all this stuff from this MIT brainiac, and I open up the Bible to the Emmaus story, and I see these worlds, and it's just remarkable to me that we live in this place where Jesus meets us in this liminal place, this liminal space. And what he does in that resurrection story is he opens their minds and he opens their hearts. And then with that, they are open to new actions. They let go and they let come. Or as we say, they let God. Thanks be to God.